Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast that is currently on break but simply can't resist talking about a real doll. My name is Karen O'Donoghue and I have a funky haircut and smell like basement. Joining me is the doll who's definitely not thinking about death anymore. It's Jen Cowney.
Hello.
Hi.
What should I say? Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
I'm so ready for this.
I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so happy I'm here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you were specially requested. So as many of you will have at least, you know, noticed by now, I'm on break because I need to get married and move house and, you know, live my one wild and precious. But I just like, I've been looking forward to Barbie for so long. It just felt silly and like po-faced to not do an episode
completely
out of season, and then a couple of people under the DMs being like, can you please get Jen Cowney on to talk about it,
which is the greatest compliment I've ever received in my life. So yeah. Whoever you are, thank you.
I think what's nice is that because you've done the Taylor Swift episodes with us before, and what is Taylor Swift but a living Barbie?
Oh my, of course. Of course it is a really simple jump, and actually I feel like I'm often your on break lady for some reason.
Yeah.
You're like, I've got a thing.
I have thoughts I simply must share.
Are you around tonight? And I'm like, sure.
Sure. Well, we actually saw Barbie last night together.
We did.
And for you, it was the first viewing. For me, it was the second viewing.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to be in quite interestingly different places here, because you saw it last week.
Yes.
As you said, you've read everything under the sun and listened to all of the podcasts. Mm-hmm. So you're like, you've gone deep. You're like the Barbie academic right now.
Yes.
Whereas I saw it last night, went home, went to bed, went to work, thought about trains and buses all day. Yeah. And now I'm here. So like, I'm still very fresh.
Yes. And also, we went to quite a late viewing, so
we
didn't even have time to debrief afterwards. Mm-mm. So I know that you enjoyed it, and I know nothing else.
This is literally our debrief, but we have not spoken about this film other than the toilet queue afterwards.
So before we begin, tell me, what is your relationship with Barbie?
So historically, no relationship.
I suspected.
Oh, did you? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you what your relationship was, and I see you beat me to it. But yeah. I never had a Barbie growing up. Mm. And I don't think I ever wanted one, but it's really hard to separate what you didn't want from what your parents didn't want for you. So today I was like, did I not have Barbies because I didn't like Barbie, or did my parents have a problem with Barbie? I don't think they did. I don't think my parents were anti-Barbie.
So what were your toys of choice?
I think I was quite a feral child. Mm-hmm. So there is a story about me from when I was at one point as a child given like a fairy doll with wings by like one of those kind of like random Father Christmases at a shopping centre.
Yeah.
And just for context, my father was a fighter pilot and we grew up on active air bases, and I picked it up and went
sweet.
I was like three or something, and I had no idea what fairies were supposed to do, and I was like, wings, of course.
It's so hard
to
tell
a supersonic jet.
It's so hard to tell if that story is like a lesbian awakening story, a woman in STEM awakening story, or a my dad's in the army story.
I know, and it really is just that one. But yeah, I think I never had Barbies growing up, and like, I remember I had lots of like farm animals and like Lego
and
Duplo and painting sets, and I was quite feral in the woods a lot.
Yeah.
Because again, living on an airbase is very safe for children to just piss off and do whatever they want. But my brother did ballet, so I'm pretty sure my parents weren't like, ooh, no, I'm going to have pink in the house.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just don't think I was much of a Barbie kid. And I remember, I was thinking about this today, I was like, I remember I used to live, in fact, I lived next door to a girl twice, because that's what happens when you're a military brat.
Yeah.
And she was like a Barbie girl, and she was like little and pretty and blonde, and she had the dream house and all the Barbies. Mm. And I remember just feeling like a kind of totally alien creature whenever I went to her house.
Wow.
Like, you know, sexy baby monster on the hill. And I was like, what do we do with the Barbies? So yeah, I feel like my relationship is very kind of, I don't know if I belong there.
Wow.
I didn't feel like it was for me, but now it does.
Well,
what was your relationship with Barbie? Did you have Barbies? I feel like you would have had maybe one.
Oh.
Or did you have 20?
Actually, it's no, okay, between. So my, that's very interesting you say that, but the my relationship with Barbie was absolute love, absolute adore. And I've never stopped loving her. And if I really think about it, I think she was my first piece of sentimental garbage, because I totally adored her. Mm-hmm. And I have parents who, even though we were, you know, very comfortably middle class or whatever, they have a very, what I think, healthy relationship to toys and gifts, mm-hmm. which was that you can have as many books as you want and your school uniform will always be clean and fresh and new. But, you know, toys are for Christmas and for birthdays.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the kind of thing. And so the Barbies I had were like Barbies that like were special. You know, they were like the Barbie from Anastasia kind of thing, because that was my favorite movie. Or like the first time I ever used the internet is like it was yesterday. I was probably about 6 or 7 years old, and there was a girl down the road from me who was slightly younger than me, mm-hmm. and she had all the Barbies and she had all the things and just everything. Her name was Lorna. If you're out there, Lorna, I think about you sometimes. And because she was younger than me, I was able to sort of like be the artistic director of all of our Barbie games.
Oh, okay.
So it was my plot, my script, my story, my pick, my casting, you know, like everything. And that's what Barbie was for me. It was like having like Scarlett Johansson and Keira Knightley and Emma Mackey and whatever. It was like having those people in your house that you could make say your stories for you.
Yeah.
And I remember I was playing with Lorna and art directing our games, and her dad came in and said, "What do you girls want to know about? We can access anything in the world. I've brought home the internet from work."
Wow.
Essentially, like, I have this can of internet. What shall we do with it? And I can still remember what was his excitement of like showing children something that he had just discovered himself. He just discovered fire, and now he's showing it to, you know, these small children. And we were like, Barbie. And then, so the first website I ever saw was the Barbie website loading line by line.
That's extremely cute. And it's so beautiful.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And it was the, sorry, this is such a long answer, but like it was the 90s, which was a, I'm somewhat of a Barbie scholar. It was a real
time. I can see this and I'm really glad.
It was, the Dolls of the World collection were a big thing. Now, since the which is basically like a Barbie from every country, and it's like, you know, and sometimes
an
that's
early
like,
foray into diverse inclusivity.
Yes.
By Mattel, I'm assuming.
Well, there was always diverse Barbies from like the 70s onwards.
Okay.
But
I didn't know this.
In terms of like, definitely the 80s and the 90s were a big time for them pushing like, not just Barbie who happens to have black skin, but like people who have like, you know, costumes and, you know, whatever. And some of it was very respectful and some of it was very beautiful. Some of it was a bit like, okay.
Not so much. Okay, yeah, I can imagine that.
A little bit of a lampshade head going on here. Maybe that's not so cool. But I just remember all these Barbies loading up, and he printed for me, he let me print a picture of what I thought the most beautiful one was. And it was Indian Barbie. She had like a pink sari with a gold sash.
Oh.
And I brought it home and I pinned it up on my wall. And then shortly afterwards, my mum went on a trip to London, and she went to Hamleys and she brought that doll back for me. And it's still in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is you've got a very meaningful relationship with Barbie.
So meaningful. So you can
yeah, I can imagine why this is a very important thing for you that you have come back off break from. And FYI,
I've seen it twice. You know, it's been on for a fortnight. I've seen it twice.
Seen it twice in a week. You're moving house next week. You're meant to be packing. Gavin doesn't know you're here doing this. This is a secret podcast. The first he'll know is when it comes out. I should not have said that. No, he's going to know later.
Yeah, he's going to know when he gets home and he realises that, like, when he just sees that there's, like, all the packing tape abandoned on the floor, the dog with the sign around its fucking head saying, "Feed me," and just the back door open and the door slamming in the wind.
Like, just a little trail of, like, pink tulle on the way to central London.
Sparkles, yes. So,
okay, so two people with very different historical kind of context for Barbie, and also a very different movie context.
Yes.
As a fresh off the boat Barbie, having just seen it yesterday, and a real, you've gone deep, you know all the things.
Yeah. In many ways, this is what I've been waiting for my entire life.
Oh God, the pressure.
Yeah. I even put myself under a huge amount of pressure. I think it's why, you know, sometimes they put donkeys in with racehorses to calm them down. In terms of our Barbie knowledge, I am the racehorse that's pulsating with muscle and sweat.
You're this like trembling, whinnying, like, and I'm just there in the corner chewing some straw and being like sure. Give me some oats. I don't mind sharing my oats.
What did you think of the movie?
I absolutely loved it. I went in with like no expectations because I was on holiday last week, which is why I only saw it yesterday. And I intentionally avoided anything that might be a spoiler because I just sort of wanted to go in like raw. And anything I might have imagined is not what that film was, which I think is probably everyone's experience of it. Like, I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't expect that. And I really enjoyed what felt like, it's kind of chaotic. Like, there's no two ways around it. It's like this sort of magpie's nest of stuff. And it's like Greta Gerwig at every turn was like, and why not do this? Yes, and she just kept on going. And I think, like, as a whole, it almost reminded me, and this is a massive compliment, of when you're a kid and you're playing with dolls or farmyard animals and you're making up stories and it just goes completely like in random directions. Yeah. It felt like that.
Yes.
Because there was all these different storylines and and even watching it, like I think I'm usually quite good at being like, and I think this will happen next. Mm. And I just didn't know idea.
Yeah, right?
I kept on being like, whoa, okay. Sure, that's not what I thought would come up now. And now we're doing this and now there's...
Yeah.
Now there's a dance scene. And I just, honestly, I just like grinned the whole way through and just... cackled, I think, most of it too, and just grabbed your hand a lot and was like in your ear, which I'm sure you really enjoyed.
I really did.
It was extraordinary. It was like everything a Barbie movie should be, as I say, as the Barbie donkey here, but also everything I would never have expected a Barbie movie to be, and particularly one which is co-signed by Mattel. And again, I think, not to bring my quite boring job in, but I work in advertising and I work with big brands and I know how precious they are about their IP and how, like, funny they get about stuff.
And how much they drink their own Kool-Aid.
Oh, you know God. I mean? Yeah, like, just some of the stuff that went into it, I was like, it works so well. But, like, honestly, the brass balls on the Mattel executives who were like, sure, we'll sign that off.
Yeah.
We're not going to veto that. We're going to fund that. I thought it was...
not only will we not veto it, we will fund it.
It was amazing. And I just think in every way it's just a fantastic film. So, yeah. That's my top review. I will be delving into the specifics there, of course. But
the phrase that I've been hearing a lot around it has been the film, the ultimate thing of, like, having its cake and eating it kind of thing. Because it's sort of pointing out, very painstaking, like, there's no getting around that people, as many people as love Barbie as people who hate Barbie too, or are simply ambivalent. And the idea that, like, that they delineated very clearly all the very reasonable arguments.
Yes.
Why Barbie is maybe not good for women or whatever, which is an argument I personally have never felt held water myself. My argument being that, like, if Barbie were the only thing in our society that was telling women to be thin and glamorous, and also hold down a variety of jobs and whatever, then if Barbie were the only thing that did that, perhaps I would find that more legitimate.
Yeah, although I suppose there is that, because again, working in advertising, quite often you get the sort of the often fair criticism of you are perpetuating stereotypes, and great that lots of legislation now exists to prevent that. But the defence has always been, well, advertising just reflects society and reflects what people like, and Barbie is the same. Like, it's a product. So, it's not Barbie's fault. Barbie didn't start this. It wasn't like until Barbie came along, everyone was like, hey, you don't have to look a certain way.
Yeah.
You don't have to be blonde and beautiful. Like, that clearly wasn't the case. But I suppose it can't be avoided that it has a role, particularly quite an important developmental period in people's lives of setting potential ideas of femininity, which obviously now quite different in terms of how they produce the dolls, but historically was a bit, I think, could be alienating, as again, going back to my little, like, imagine me, I'm 3 foot tall, I look like a hobbit, I'm covered in leaves, I've been roller skating through the forests, and my next door neighbour's like, do you want to play Barbies? And I'm like, oh, I don't think I'm allowed to touch the pretty pink sparkle thing.
Is that what it felt like? Yeah. Or did it feel like that seems boring?
No, it didn't feel like that seems boring. It literally felt like I'm stick of the dump. And like, I've brought my dog. What we do, I don't know.
I've brought my dog and a bit of rope.
Yeah, and I think there's something there around the idea of, like, femininity and the sort of femininity that is,
yeah,
or was, I think, and right, growing up was supposed to be acceptable, and was what you were supposed to, yeah, be or do as a woman. But at the same time, it's, you say, Barbie is not responsible for it's not, no, even a tiny bit responsible. I mean, you look back at the history of it as well, the fact that, and it's in the film, we all know at the opening, yeah, minutes, it was the first doll that wasn't just, you can pretend to be someone's mum now. Mm. Like, that is phenomenal. And I thought it was amazing how, again, I think if you'd asked me, is this going to have some kind of like feminist morality tale in it with a kind of clear thesis, I'd have been like, yes, this is going to be, mm, a film where I'm going to have something said to me about feminism and what it is to be a woman. And it's going to be like tied up with a little pink bow at the end.
Yeah.
And I loved that it didn't do that. It just kind of allowed space for so many things to be true at once. It was like, it's true that this doll is meant to make girls feel more confident and more empowered. But it's also true that for some people, yeah, it represents something quite different. And it was a film that didn't shy away from any of that. It just sort of like let it play out and let it exist. And it was just gloriously accepting of that.
It's so funny, isn't it? Because like, I think there's a lot of noise around the film as, because it is so in conversation, yeah, with feminism, with like the word patriarchy comes up about 700 times. And like, my sister took her family to see it, and including my 6-year-old nephew Rex. Oh. And when he left the cinema, he went, "What's patriarchy?"
He was like, "It's horses, men and horses."
Like, so it's funny, they say what it isn't, but not what it is.
Yeah.
For a 6-year-old, he's like, "What?" All this noise around it being about sort of gender and, you know, what the Kens represent and all that kind of thing. But what I feel like, if the movie is making an argument against anything, it's binaries and jingoism.
Yes.
Right? It's actually not, it's not against men. It's not against, it's not even against idealized gender presentation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's about living within the complexities.
Yes.
And the grey areas of being alive and being a human being, and the temptation to fall into oversimplified worldviews,
yeah,
which both Barbie and Ken, mm-hmm, experience, right? Because Barbie has this thing where she's like, she starts experiencing like thoughts of death and cellulite, and it's all so funny and great. And she's repeatedly like, "No, I don't want more complexity. No. I don't want to wear the Birkenstocks." Like, "No, the heel, the pink one,
the nice one."
Yeah. And like, and Ken's the exact same. And in his way, he wants it to, he wants everything to be a simplified worldview. And that's such a it echoes both the experience of growing up and also the experience of being alive, precisely at this moment,
yep,
kind of thing, where people do seem very lost and they have more things explaining their feelings to them than they have feelings.
Yeah, and there's too many sort of like, this is the simple answer.
Yeah.
Just subscribe to this doctrine and it'll all make sense. And
yeah,
that's a film that just puts paid to all of it and goes, well, that's true, but that's also true. This,
yeah,
thing is true. So, and there is no like didactic morality tale in it. It isn't, I don't think it is trying to land a particular school,
yeah,
of thought. I just really,
and that thing
that
of like to be human is, yeah, to live within complexity. And for me, the like the most moving part of the movie the second time around, which didn't totally land with me the first time, was the, you know, when Ruth Handler as sort of like God, kind of Rhea Perlman as Ruth Handler as God,
or
you know?
I felt like just a little thing there before we go into it,
yeah,
like kind of that was like Pinocchio. She was breast and blue. It was like blue fairy,
yes,
isn't it? So I'm gonna,
yes,
be a real boy. Like there was so much. There's just so much like elusivity.
Oh my god! Of course, the Pinocchio reference.
But that's,
yeah,
that's, she's becoming, she's the creator and she's the Geppetto of,
yeah,
like Barbie, and is making her into a real girl with a real vagina.
back to that in a minute.
But you were saying that's,
yeah,
thing that was very moving.
The bit I found the most moving and affecting was Ruth's character saying, you know, Barbie is, you know, being a, she's like, I can't in good faith let you be a human being or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it, you know, it's hard and there's only one ending, and people invent concepts just to make it more comfortable, like Barbie or like the patriarchy. And like, yeah, we do just invent stories and dreams and theories and ideas and movements just to bear being alive.
Yeah.
And being alive is, you know, death and disappointment and arguments and betrayal and like, and that, so like the main character just says yes to all of it. I find it so moving.
I think if I would watch it again, I would probably cry at that bit.
Yeah.
I think
like I'm crying now.
You are. Well enough a little bit there. But yeah, I think watching that, I was so very much like Pinocchio.
Yeah, you know
just
Pinocchio.
But I think, God, yeah. The bit that made me cry was the, which is probably a really obvious bit, but the old lady, when she's sitting there on the beach and she says, "You're really beautiful." And the old lady goes, like, "I know." And it's just that moment because there are no old people in Barbie land.
Yeah, she's never seen aging before.
There's no such thing as old Barbie. That's just not a thing. Probably there should be. But I don't know, that just really, like, I immediately just, like, teared up and just this thing of, because it's so obvious and so easy for anything about Barbie to become about physical beauty. And that's such a fraught topic and it's one that is so difficult to get to the right answer on. But I thought that was just done in a really, like, a very poignant and very emotive way. Just that little moment where I was like, she is beautiful. And she's just reading her magazine at the bus stop.
I know it.
I know it. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard Greta Gerwig speak about that moment a lot, and of it being, you know, that is her friend who's a, like, a legendary costume designer and just a real character and a real card. And she said, she said she'd do the movie if I bought her 3 martinis.
Oh my God.
Just so fabulous.
What a phenomenal writer.
What amazing. And like the idea that, like, Greta was, you know, like, this is the, if this goes, then I go. That this is the heart of the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
There we go. Even the Barbie donkey has noticed something important.
She was the Barbie donkey.
I haven't even read the commentary and I still identified that as the important moment. Give me a gold star. It was so beautiful.
Oh God. So okay. So let's.
Okay. She's having a weep.
Yeah. Oh, it's just so good. So I want to talk about Barbie Land.
I love Barbie Land.
I know I could have spent 6 hours in Barbie Land. Just nothing going wrong.
I partly hope that they make it into a real thing that you can go to, and I partly don't because I don't want to see all the Instagrams.
Oh my God. Oh, I forgot about. Yeah.
There definitely was a period, I think, in the days leading up to the, like, theatre release date where I just stopped going on Instagram because I was so bored of every single brand going, like,
I felt like Greta lived in my house with me.
I was just like, please get away.
Go away.
Please get away from me. And it would just be like the most random things, you know. I can't even remember examples and I wouldn't name names, but I was just like, seriously? Why are you doing this too? There's no exposure to be, anyway. I think it was a moment in time.
Yeah.
But Barbie Land, yes. Like, the fact that it wasn't CGI'd as well, I mean, if such an easy option would have been to, like,
CGI, so easy.
Green screen the shit out of it and just, like, make it all computers. But it was so real.
Everything was real.
And I did actually, our lovely friend Becky sent me one article today, which I read on my way here, to just to be like, so I've, like, at least got some facts, and I skimmed it. And the only thing that I remember from it, there's two things I remember. And one was that in Barbie Land there are 7 suns so that no one is in shadows at any point.
Oh, that is
good. I don't know if that's true.
I haven't heard that one. 7 suns.
But there are 7 suns, and I don't know what that means because I literally was skimming this article, but I assume it also means the way they lit the movie. If you think about it, there aren't any, like, dark cavernous spaces.
No.
I don't think anyone cast a shadow in that movie.
Oh, that's so interesting. And that does sort of, like, lend itself to the unreality of the whole. What's so fabulous about that is that, like, obviously they've built so successfully this world that is, like, completely mimics a child's imagination as they are playing, right? And the whole thing of, you didn't need it explained of, like, nobody ever walks their Barbie down the stairs. You just pick up your Barbie and you put it
there.
And
there's no liquids.
There's no liquids. There's no organic matter at all. No. And it was just the sticker decals in the fridge.
And the way she just walks over the pool at the beginning.
No.
You would, wouldn't you? You'd be like, that's cool and blue. She's walking across that.
But even, like, all their kind of little manners of speech. Like, I was struck when, you know, she's having her day and she goes to see the president.
Oh my God, yes!
And the president, you know, eats a ray and she's like, and turn to the Barbie on your left and say this and turn and tell her and give her a compliment. And then she just keeps saying no comment. She's like, ha ha ha, no comment, ha ha. And it's like, that's how, when you're a child and you're playing like an official person, that's like the one thing that you know. Like, I remember even seeing a video of Northwest say it.
Oh my God.
Or saying, no pictures, no pictures.
Oh my God. It's like you hear those stories of kids, particularly who are the children of people who work in my industry, like, faking being on the phone and being like, yeah, I'll call you back, like little toddlers doing that. Like, it's just, all the little, like, verbal tics of a kid playing.
I remember this tweet of this woman who works in publishing, and she said, I asked my 5-year-old what game she was playing, and she said, Acquisitions. Which is so lovely, the idea of just, like, Kids sapping up like little fragments of their parents' jobs.
Well, I mean, it's like hoovering them up. Thinking that a fairy is a jet plane, but you know.
Yeah. Beautiful.
That's all you've really got for your reference point is what your parents do, which is everything.
Just every time I was reminded of this sort of like child world was just so, it's just like even when one of the Kens, he picks up a binoculars and it's just like a plastic binoculars with no lenses. So everything was so delightful.
The little rear view mirror in the car, which was just like a decal as well.
Yeah.
Just this little pink and blue spot. We also saw it on the biggest screen I've ever been in my life.
So good.
It was like the size of a 4-story building. So you really could see everything up close, which I definitely
which was
enjoyed.
Like, I've never really been to an IMAX screening before, but I was like, oh, it shouldn't be for explosions, it should be for details.
I don't even think it was an IMAX. I think
really?
IMAX is even bigger. I think
oh
IMAX
my god,
is like,
I want to see what an IMAX is then.
I think
then.
I'd be alarmed and afraid in an IMAX.
Yeah.
But anyway,
this was very alarming.
It was very big. Like,
but it
was
what a huge screen is made for, which is
totally.
Like catching little details and
completely.
Like.
I don't want to see war up close.
No.
I want to see the dream house.
And also the fact that like what's something really fun, I find so satisfying is that like the proportions of Barbie world. So it's like the ratio
yes.
of Barbie's head to the ceiling is always only like an inch or so. Because, but like, and that's not how we wouldn't really notice that.
No.
But that's just what makes it all feel oh. like toys.
And it was, yeah, the attention to detail in every single bit of it.
Yeah. But just, then this sort of wonderful rug pull in the first sort of minute and a half of... you know, and because Barbie can be anyone, that means that girls can be anything kind of thing. And then, and that's why all problems of feminism have been solved, which is so fantastic. Oh. It's just like, oh, like my best argument for Barbie being underwritten by the Barbie movie. Because
totally.
It's like, if that were true, then it would be true.
Yes. And it's just said with just this childlike wonder as
yeah.
well. It's just like, and this is true, and this is fine. And like, even with that, it was a movie that is kind of in many ways devoid of cynicism as well. Like,
yeah.
it's just everyone in it is just in it. Like, no one is there trying to be like, I'm in a Barbie film, but I'm going to
yeah.
like do a slight side eye to camera. Like, everyone just embraced it, and the movie itself embraced its own kind of like high camp,
yeah,
just earnest. I just honestly, there were moments during like the Ryan Gosling dance scenes where I was like, give this man an Oscar
oh,
for this.
I
like
know.
Just like the embodiment of just
it's
a silly.
It's the first time I fancied him.
Really?
Yeah, I've never really seen it with Ryan Gosling before, but just seeing any man who's that classically attractive be that silly is so horny
it,
to me. Silly men are just, it's it for me.
Why don't they know this?
I wish they knew.
So few of them realise that you don't, and I mean, I suppose that's one of the things that you find in this movie is that Ken is so much more attractive when he's just being a silly, lovely goof
yeah.
than when he's doing his Mojo Dojo Casa House beer stuff. Like, it's just, bad Ken. And I was like, oh, I feel like I've dated bad Ken before.
Yeah.
But good Ken is what you want.
She doesn't want either of them.
Oh, she doesn't want either. Okay, she doesn't. But like me, watching it as it, I'm like,
yeah.
this is a good lesson in what is, you know, positive masculinity. Although he only has one job and it's beach and he lives within her gaze, which is, of course, also problematic.
Barbie has a perfect day every day and Ken only has a good day.
When
and Barbie
looks
at
him. Poor Ken.
I just, as well, something that I found so wonderful about, you know, absorbing that Ken performance the second time around,
mm-hmm.
because the first time around, it's just an assault of charisma and just...
So much.
Just Ryan Silly Goosling.
Like, he's a silly goosling.
He's being a silly goosling. And but it's such, everything he does is such a wonderful surprise. Like, sublime! You know, it's just like...
Yeah.
It just hits you waves and waves of like of incredible charisma and everything is so surprising and wonderful. And but then watching it for the second time, I thought about it more in the context of, you know, Ryan Gosling is somebody who came up with Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears in the Mickey Mouse
oh
Club
my gosh,
in
yeah.
the 90s, like a singing, dancing child who then, you know, over like post The Notebook,
mm-hmm.
which was his apex moment of like. Sealing his heart in millennial women's
yeah.
hearts and minds and groins. But there's this theory that I'm actually, when I get into the next season of Sentimental Garbage, I would really like to examine more, which is the hunk to hero trajectory, which is, bear with,
okay,
this idea that like an actor arrives into the public consciousness and he arrives as a man in his early 20s, generally. Mm-hmm. Think Heath Ledger in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
Think Ryan Gosling in The Notebook.
Yeah. He's a princeling.
These little princelings that arrive, Matthew McConaughey in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Mm-hmm.
They arrive in our consciousness and they are their comedy chops and their romantic charisma and their dramatic abilities are nurtured by female culture and we all nurture it and we're just like, yes, our guy. And then we nurture it for long enough and then sooner or later the call from Christopher Nolan comes or the call from Quentin Tarantino comes and that man shoots out the barn door of women's gaze and becomes the darling of the manosphere. And
oh,
that's what happened,
God,
to Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling went from fucking The Notebook to Drive and he never looked back. And most of them don't. But Ryan did.
He came back for
He's
us.
He's come back for us.
I love him.
Right? Like, I had this epiphany while I was on another podcast and then we were talking about like the rom-coms we could have gotten out of Heath Ledger. And I was like, no, we were never going to get the rom-com out of Heath Ledger.
You never know.
I don't think we would have, but...
Okay.
I think he had gone down the Nolan tube, yeah, and he was never going to come back regardless, life or death. But like, Gosling came back for us.
He came back for us.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Oh, I think that speaks volumes about him as a person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is, yeah. I mean, I have fancied him previously, so, but it was a very attractive performance, yeah, despite the fact that he has no genitals and is wearing a mink coat with a pony lining for
but
much of it.
The men who are going to see Barbie are going to see it for Ryan Gosling because he is their Barbie. You know, like.
He is their Barbie.
He is. There's. I find it very dear when very straight men just when they do when okay, so we send our Goslings, our Ledgers, our McConaughey's down the pipe into the kingdom, and they do their Christopher Nolan movies or whatever, and then that's when a man has gotten the love of the straight men,
that's when it's safe to come back.
Yeah, but the atmosphere around it changes, and like the way they talk about them is so, like, when I listen to my brother talk about actors like this or Gavin talk about actors like this, it's very puffed up and proud. It's very like, well, if Gosling's doing it, it must be good, you know. It's very like,
oh, they're so reverential.
Yeah,
I have to say, to that point of kind of like the hero movie and the superhero movie and the war movie, yeah, one of my favorite moments was the D-Day landings of the, yeah, Kens. Like, I just, because this is one of those things that I definitely, you know, and this is, the horror of war is real, but the horror of having to watch a film about war is even realer to me. And again, military child, so I've had to sit, yeah, through a lot. But like, just those films where it's, there are no women and there's no joy and there's no humour and it's just relentless, harrowing men screaming through the front lines. Yeah. I really enjoy that they remade that with horsey boats and little plunger arrows. I think that was a moment that I just felt like...
So genius.
Every single male actor in that scene knew that they were clowning up.
Yeah.
Basically, bread and butter, the where they make their dollar. And yeah. it's a brave move to do it. And it just cinematically on that big old screen, I was like, I'm not watching. I don't know what the most recent one was. Some version modern of Band of Brothers.
Yeah,
I'm watching the
Dunkirk.
Movie. Dunkirk. Okay, mm-hmm. cool. I didn't see it.
And it wasn't for us.
It wasn't for us.
Yeah.
But somehow, apparently, it's greater cinema than Barbie, and it's absolutely not.
Well, this
and
is the Barbie versus Oppenheimer thing again, isn't it?
That's just not even a thing.
It's not, there's no
It's
versus.
Just not a thing. Like, you can see one or both, or you can see neither, and no one cares. Like, it's just no.
I agree.
Not a thing.
Not a thing.
But that scene was phenomenal. And actually, this leads me on to one of the other things I absolutely adored about this film is, and the reason I think of that is because there's that moment during the battle, the Great Ken battle, where the sort of like chorus line of businessmen appears. Mm. Will Ferrell and his like troop.
Utterly narratively relevant, but so joyful.
But the thing is, I think they are narratively relevant in two ways. One, it's because at that moment when they're having the fight, someone just says something and then Will Ferrell's character goes, oh no, there are no weapons here. And I'm like, there are no weapons in Barbie land. There are no tools of violence in the world of Barbie. Like, there are moments when Barbie is sort of, when she's in the real world and she feels confronted by suddenly like an unusual male gaze, but there is no active like jeopardy for Barbie at any point. At no point do you worry she's genuinely going to be murdered or assaulted. Like, it's a film which has no actual villains in it, and that is really refreshing for a film with a female main character. Like, Will Ferrell was set up to be the kind of like small cat holding like evil character, and actually he was just a sort of chump who pranced through and had a lovely time and clearly was like a bit of a Peter Pan character who'd never grown up and just liked playing with dolls as well, and by the
and
end
he was just very invested in Barbie's hate safety
and you meet
as an ideological concept
completely. And just the way at the beginning when they sort of the boardroom opens and it's all the men and you're like oh yeah, these are gonna be the bad guys because it's all the men controlling the way girls think, and actually it turns out that they're not, they're just this sort of like gentle, almost like tap dancing, like troop. And that bit where again, I don't even know what his character is, Mr. Mattel, whoever, call me mother, just casually mentions that the ghost of Ruth Handler just lives on the 17th floor, and he's cool with that. And that like weird chase scene where they don't catch her, it was just like a weird, lovely comedy of errors. And there's no one who's bad at the end of it. You don't sit there and go, oh, any of the Kens were the villain, or even the patriarchy wasn't really the villain.
Yeah, because
no villain.
Because
there's no weapons, no villain.
No weapons, no villain. And Ken, once he realised it wasn't about horses, he kind of lost interest anyway.
Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't so many more men lose interest?
It's so funny to me, though, how you would think, if when confronted with our world, that horses and men do run it together. Because just any statue, any painting.
So good.
Like, of course. Oh, they're friends together.
And the police on the horses.
And the police on the That was to me the one of the first big like, oh shit, kind of, because this could very easily be mistaken at first glimpse for being almost like a $100 million SNL sketch kind of thing, and actually bears a lot of resemblances to years ago Britney Spears did a Barbie SNL sketch, which actually she's great in.
Okay,
and,
never seen it. We'll
but you know how sometimes like an SNL character will be so successful they'll make a whole movie out of it, like Wayne's World. Do you know what I mean?
I did not know that was an SNL character.
Yeah, originally.
I've learned something new today, thank you. Okay.
But like, you know, this thing of like, this is clearly a sort of a fairly thin comedy concept, but adorable enough that we can watch it for a long time.
Yeah.
And that being the very Wayne's World sort of concept or whatever. But then the moment where I was like, oh, this is really aiming to be a cerebral thinking person's movie that's also incredibly fun, was when Ryan Gosling is going up the escalators at Century City and he's seeing all the men on the money, you know, all the presidents, all the, you know, men shaking hands, Al Pacino in a mink, like, you know, or Sylvester Stallone. Like the thing of like, oh, we've been looking at Barbie Land for 45 minutes about like, oh, what a crazy fantasy, but we're living in the flip version of that crazy fantasy.
Yes. And it's all just there.
It's all just there. All on the money.
On the money, all the horses, all the statues. That was one of the things that really did surprise me actually, was the way that we kind of flip between real world and Barbie world. Mm-hmm. Again, I kind of was like, is this going to be a movie all in Barbie world? or is it going to start in Barbie World and end in Barbie World? But I like the way that it just kind of went forward.
Yeah, and how and had the logic of Barbie World bled into that world by way of Mattel's boardroom. Like I think a lot, lots of, I've spoken to people who this movie did not work for, and they're smart people, but they were like, one of the many complaints was that the logic of it fell apart for them when like Mattel's whole vibe was seemed to be like almost like Barbie World. They didn't really, they thought it worked. They thought it was just like, it just shattered the thing for them. Like, the real world should be the real world and the Barbie world should be Barbie world kind of thing. But, you know, I guess that's
the
dealer's choice.
I liked that Mattel was kind of this weird liminal space between the imaginary child world and the real world.
It's a town in Sweden.
It, like, but that's what Barbie Land is. But Mattel is just this huge building. They were wearing their little, the little cut-off jumpers. Do you know, just their little chinos and their little grey.
The bit where
I used to wear a uniform like that when I worked in a fancy hotel. I really felt for them.
The bit where that internee, low-level employee guy, who you think is going to be more of a character,
no,
and just becomes not a character.
He's just cute. I'm a man with no power. Does that make me a woman?
The bit where he's like, so is Barbie Land like an imaginary liminal space or is it like a real place? And everyone turns to him and goes, yes.
I think, like, yeah, I think actually the Mattel part is one of the bits that I'm really, really enjoyed. And again, partly probably that affection comes from just knowing that Mattel helped make this film and they were so happy to just be like, yes, fine, take the piss out of us.
Yeah.
Just like, do what you want. No worries.
Maybe though, when you heighten, thinking about Mattel as being the major sponsors of this film, when you heighten your own office to being this like crazy farcical space, it's a way easier way of depicting it because it's,
yeah, probably.
Like I think a lot about how when The Social Network came out and how Mark Zuckerberg took his entire staff to go see it, and in order to own the parody of yourself, you have to sort of laugh at it louder than everybody else.
Yes. Although that wasn't a parody, was it?
No, it wasn't. But, you know, you have to show that you're in on the joke in order for no one to feel sorry for you or to raise an eyebrow. And I think maybe, possibly, although I do believe it was Greta's vision entirely, pushing yourselves as being the cartoonish farcical sort of sweeps it away from being any real criticism of you as a company.
That is probably true, actually. I still can't think of any clients or brands I've worked for that would allow it. Like,
yeah, no,
I feel like it's still...
It's quite a cerebral thing to push a... Like, if you're working with that client, being like, the thing is, the more idiotic you seem, actually, the less culpable you appear.
That's not a logic that normally goes down well.
Yeah.
Really. They just... Yeah, the two things that I remember from the one article I read on my way here, one being The Seven Sons, and the other was, and I've got a piece of paper because I wrote it down, was that the right at the beginning of the film, the quote, like, all of these women are Barbie and Barbie is all of these women, is something that Greta Gerwig was actually told at the Mattel offices by executives. And she said of it, this is extraordinary. This is very high spiritual work that they've done. And I was like, that's wonderful. That was like, that were two things that landed in my brain from that article. But it is. Every woman is Barbie. And Barbie is everyone.
Yeah.
All of these women are Barbie and Barbie is all of these women.
It is a very high-minded, like,
just
philosophy.
Everyone being called Barbie. Well, or Ken. Or Alan.
Or and Alan.
And Alan. And Alan. He can wear all of Ken's clothes.
His clothes fit me. I'm Ken's friend. One of my favourite parts of the movie is because I first saw it with Tashinella on like a day after it came out.
Yeah.
In the BFI, everyone in pink.
The whole experience.
All the girls, gays and theys were out, man. It was so fun. And what I keep thinking about, because everyone keeps talking about this sort of the Barbie Oppenheimer thing and how great it is for cinemas. And what I keep thinking is that, like, all of these cinemas, because their seasons have been, it's been progressively worse business the last few years, would have laid a lot of people off. So getting the staff.
Oh, God. It
must be
like,
impossible.
Like Christmas staff, but for Barbie.
Like Christmas staff, but for Barbie and Oppenheimer. Like, it must be very difficult to own a cinema and just get the people in and, like, what if someone's sick? But anyway, we went afterwards on the train home. Me and Ella just, like, were so lit up with the whole thing that, like, we were like, we live in Barbie Land. Like, I know, this might not be true for every woman, and maybe everyone doesn't feel this way, but I certainly feel like every single woman I know knows how to take a compliment, knows exactly how beautiful and smart and talented she is. Like, a lot of the women I know in whatever field they've chosen, they tend to be pretty high up in it. And they all got these great boyfriends who are just interesting little guys.
Their job is beach.
Like, what is your boyfriend's job if not beach?
My boyfriend's job is computer.
I know, but spiritually, his job is beach.
To be fair, he does like beach. He likes boat. He doesn't like sea, though, which is weird.
His job is boat.
His job is boat.
He's not a sailor, but his job is boat.
He just likes boat. To sit on boat. Yeah.
And that's nice.
That is very nice. But I think actually as well, having said I agree with that, I also was really... I felt very seen by, and so the Sasha and Gloria characters, mm-hmm. who were good and cool, but like very much not the emotional heart of the movie for me. But there were a couple of moments where I did really relate to both of them. And I think, first of all, was most obviously Sasha, so the daughter, the way that, and it's not really called out, but it just sort of happens gently in the background. She just becomes a bit less cynical and does sort of just embrace aspects of herself, like having a ribbon in her hair. And it's not like that takes away from who she is and that she's smart and funny and very sassy. She just is allowed, or allows herself to become a bit more, to sort of play with her femininity, her feminine side through the movie. And I really enjoyed that, again, as a child who grew up not really sort of feeling that that was a culture that felt like mine, and being a teenager and being like, oh, what if I want to wear a dress and lipstick and like have long hair and be the first woman in my whole family to have long hair, mainly because I have more hair. But like, they were all like, why is your hair long? And I was like, because it's nice. But I really sort of, I felt quite seen by her as a character, and she's not the obvious character and she's not the main character, but there's something there around being able to go like, you know, you can be clever and smart and like very culturally and politically aware. And you can also like wear a pink jumpsuit if you want. Those two things are not incompatible. But the other thing that I really enjoyed was, and it's sort of a slightly rooted in motherhood, which is not a thing that I know about, but Gloria, her mum, talking about when Barbie's having her little meltdown and she's like, but I'm not the CEO and I'm not the president and I haven't won a Nobel Prize. I really felt that too, because I think sometimes, and I'm conscious that, like, I do have a, I'm fairly good at my job, but there's still this pressure, like, particularly if you're a person who doesn't have children, but I think also just if you are any person who's a woman, to, like, prove yourself and be the best at everything. And I've had a conversation at least once, possibly twice, possibly five times, with various people, usually older women, where I've been like, I feel like true equality will come when I, as a woman, can phone it in at work as much as my male equivalents can. I'm just not to say that any of my male equivalents do phone it in at work, but they could more than I could. You know, like, men in my job, if they want to just sort of, like, faff around a bit more, they have so much more leeway than women do. I think we just are, we're held to higher standards. And there's almost a sense that, like, particularly if you are not going to have a family, that that must be because you've decided to focus on your career and become the very best at whatever you do. And I just like really felt like it was kind of woven in there, this sense of like, but is it okay to just be like ordinary Barbie? And is it, would it be all right to like,
in a flattering top, just trying to feel okay?
Exactly. And I'm not saying that I am like ordinary Barbie every single day or that anyone is, but I really liked that that space was there for that to be a thing too, and to go, you don't have to be the CEO or write a book or win a Nobel Prize. You can just be a person, and that is enough. And that really spoke to me, because there are days when people are like, oh, so like, how, you know, why do you work a 4-day week? And I'm like, so I don't want to work five. There's no real reason for it. I just don't want to be there 5 days a week, and I feel like I'm supposed to justify that, but there isn't a reason.
I think that's so fabulous. Like, I think different people have had different reactions to that. I definitely hear what you're saying, and like the pressure, particularly if you've like someone who's been, you know, vocal about not wanting children, there is this automatic switch that gets flipped. That's like, oh, so you must be someone who wants to be the panther of the boardroom. Yeah.
The career woman.
And you're like, no, I just want to have a really nice, like, rounded life where I take trips and...
I just wonder, is it not enough to just want to have a nice time?
Yeah, that is definitely a thing, and that's fucked up.
Am I allowed to just enjoy, like, wonder at the world and take my joys and, like, my sense of self from things that aren't the thing that pays me? Yes.
Yeah. But it's this sort of, this thing of, and they get at it in the monologue, But, you know, Barbie is this character who has existed in our public consciousness since the 1960s. And she has been controversial that entire time.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the first sort of focus group testing that was ever done on Barbie as a doll, because kids wanted her badly, but mm-hmm. parents were like, this is a weird, sexy toy. Like, this is like inappropriate, which I get if that doll has never existed before, suddenly having like this like blonde doll with titties.
And they're big titties.
They're big titties. Mm-hmm. And so there was this child psychologist that did this focus group, and
I feel like I've heard about this. Yes.
Yes, it's fantastic. And he talked to all the mothers or whatever, and he, from this focus, they were all very disturbed by her. But once they sort of clung on to the idea that this being 1963, that they all had this low level fear that their daughters, who were growing up in like post-war suburbs and running around outside and climbing trees and scabs on their knees and everything, that their sort of raffishness would not be phases they grew out of, and they would become homely or overeducated or any of the reasons that this was not something that like, you know, this was not a Stepford Wife thing of them blathering it around. It was clearly a deep-seated fear of these women feeling that their daughters would not grow out of tomboyishness, would not find husbands, and would not learn the skills of womanhood mm-hmm. properly, and that Barbie is supposed to be this, was originally marketed as something that was like taught you poise, grace, and would eventually get you the meal ticket to husbandry, you know.
Good Lord.
And, you know, so there's that originally comes in the early 1960s with this baby sort of boomer generation. And then the more that time passes and the more Barbie reflects the world that's changing. And like, mm-hmm. you know, then a few years later when like as like the free love movement comes in, the hair gets longer and straighter and there's less makeup and it's all these changes that happen. And the more ways of feminism come in, they have problems with her and she keeps trying to change and widen and expand and diversify. And now she's in a wheelchair and now she has a skin condition and now she's all dolls of the world. And like, you know, all these things. Now there's a ramp in her dream house for the wheelchair, you know, like, it doesn't matter what she does, everyone always hates her.
Yeah.
And that is actually the way in which she relates to the female experience more than anything.
There's nothing you can do.
Yeah. There's nothing you can do.
There's no way of winning this game.
Yeah. And Barbie knows that better than anybody.
She is us and we are her.
Yeah.
We are all Barbie.
We are all Barbie. Wrestling under the weight of a culture's expectations. What did you think of the final line?
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it very much. Yes, I didn't see it coming at all.
Who could?
Like, just, you know, I'm here to see my gynecologist. It was perfect because, just the rug pull on that.
It's so good. Just the framing of, like, you think she's about to interview for a job or something.
Yeah, and she's going to be the CEO of Mattel and she's going to design Barbies or she's going to change the world. And it's just that she's got a brand new vagina. And she wants to check it's okay.
And then, like, she's so happy about it. She's so happy about her new vagina.
She is.
And also the fact that, like, in some ways having a vagina is a job itself.
Oh, it really is. It is. And what an honour.
What an honour.
What an honour.
An honour and a privilege.
An honour and a privilege. Yeah, I thought it was an absolutely phenomenal final line. The whole thing.
The whole thing.
I will be watching it again. And I'll probably watch it again and then kick myself for all these things I didn't notice and be like, oh my God, I can't talk about that. And then I'll do another debrief with you.
And just the
after your mariage.
It's just so, like, the thing is, I'm never going to be on a plane again and not watch this movie.
It's going to be like great. It's going to be like what Spice World has previously been for you and I.
Yes.
Which is the when I'm staying at your house and we just want to watch something and it's usually Spice World.
Oh. And also just the girls the world over are getting a brand new sleepover movie.
They are. And just like for young girls as well. I was talking to one of my clients this week because obviously I've talked to my clients about Barbie. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, hi Barbie to all the people. And he was saying that his partner came home from seeing it just in floods of tears because she just wished she'd had that kind of representation and that sort of that story growing up. And I hadn't seen it at that point and I was like, oh God, I'm going into something quite heartfelt, but I can feel that. I think, for like teenage girls and for teenage girls and just for young women in general to see this film. Yeah, it's very good.
It's very, it's just so incredibly rare that a movie is made for a female audience where this degree of care is taken.
Yes.
Like, it was all created for us, you know?
It was created for the female gaze.
Yeah. And that's nice.
And yeah, I say, no villains, no actual threat of violence.
And just so
really
funny.
Really great sets. Fantastic clothes. Just the little duvet she slept under, the little sequin duvet. It had the exact right texture and the size of the sequins was so big, like it was a little doll's. Mm. Just all of that was so satisfying to watch that I could put me in, I've never wanted to wear an Oculus Rift to make me feel seasick, but you could put me in an Oculus Rift in a Barbie dream house and I'd be happy for like 10 hours.
What was your favourite outfit?
Favourite outfit?
Or outfits?
Okay, that's really difficult. Can I have a top three?
Yes.
Okay, my top three were the silly outfit they wore when cycling through the tulip fields.
Yes.
With the little trousers, whatever they're called, a lederhosen. I really enjoyed her dancing, her big dance party outfit. It reminded me very much of your hen do outfit, actually.
A little bit, Issa Rae's outfit in that scene is very like my hen outfit.
Yes, very sort of like lovely. Mm. And then, I'm torn. Okay, I actually really did think the rollerblading outfit was phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Just the big, like, how did they make them so yellow and so neon? The big skates.
And that's the Barbie that, like, we knew as well. That would have been our generation of Barbie. I remember that workout outfit so well.
Yeah.
When those are the bendable, poseable gymnast Barbie had a very similar kind of mesh outfit on.
Yes.
Stunning.
What were your favourite outfits?
I loved the sort of slightly prim blue outfit that she wore to go see Weird Barbie for the first time.
Prim blue outfit?
Yeah, with like white knee socks.
A bit like Air Hostess Barbie sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Loved actually, that. Weird Barbie. A moment for her.
A moment for Weird Barbie.
Just the way she was in the splits. that dog.
Rob Brydon as
Sugar's
daddy.
Sugar's daddy.
All the discontinued Barbies were such a joy.
Sorry, I interrupted you on your outfits.
The outfits.
There were two more, at least two.
Oh, her leaving Barbie land in her little hat. And the fact that, like, something Ella pointed out, that, like, whenever her hair was in a braid, it was that thick braid that is, like, four times as big as the doll's head, which is how braids always appear on dolls.
How does it happen? I mean, I guess it's because they've got so little heads and such much hair. Yes. Oh, anyway.
Her sleep outfit. It was just like, and the fact that every single time you saw her in Barbie land, there was a different wig. Such a wig movie.
So many wigs, so many outfits, so many shoes, so many modes of transport. You know, a little spaceship. Oh.
And I'm just so glad that we're trusting Greta Gerwig with the big female myths, you know?
Totally.
And I think what's
she
so
hasn't
interesting,
let us down yet.
What's interesting about her as a creator is that she's so, despite, like, she's like one of the greatest film directors working now, and you, like, in terms of technical filmmaking, like, faultless. In terms of the references she's pulling from, they are deep and they are enormous, like, and they are international and eclectic, and, you know, you can't doubt her.
No.
And if you compare her to, you know, the woman who directed, like, Zero Dark Thirty, is it Catherine Hardwicke?
Yeah.
It's just historically, you see a lot of women directors who can only thrive by making sort of almost apologising for their femininity, and it's quite rare to find somebody who's like just so much here to wrestle with the every film she makes is about what it's like to be a woman in some way, and that being a big enough subject as it is, you know.
Yes, so true, because I mean it's one of those things that's still, I think, very true in the workplace, is that one of the best ways to be a successful woman in the workplace is to kind of act like a man, or at least to emulate those behaviours, in particularly corporate worlds, and you're not really getting to true, like, equality and diversity until people are allowed to just be themselves and to show up the way that they are and talk about the things they care about. And Greta Gerwig being able to turn up in this extremely male-dominated industry and, you say, do the girliest movie of all and have it be one of the most successful movies.
That fantastic bit at the start where that somebody is, like, some lawyer Barbie is giving her closing whatever, and saying like, I feel passionately about Live This and I'm emotional about it, and I do not see the two as being in conflict. I can feel both with equal measure.
It's so true. They're very clever, those Barbies.
Very clever Barbies.
I do feel like, say, I kind of went into Barbie feeling Barb ambivalent. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, about Barbie as a concept. Obviously, I was very excited to see the film. And now I sort of, I feel like I have a newfound respect and affection for Barbie.
Oh.
Which I think is very nice, actually.
That is having, nice.
You know, I'm 36 years old and I've never previously understood Barbie. I've interacted with her.
Mm.
But
well, welcome to the club.
Thank you. I always felt she wasn't for me, and now I do. Now I feel like I'm allowed to be Barbie as well.
I really felt like, as somebody who would like to have children, and if I'm really honest, I would like to have daughters. When I say
just,
I'm interested in having
between
children,
you and I.
What I say is I'm interested.
Safe space.
When I have a son, I'm going to scrub this from the archives. it really made those scenes where, you know, it's kind of obviously telegraphed, mm-hmm. but America Ferrera's character, you know, it's revealed that it's her Barbie, you know,
yeah.
It's like those were her memories that she had, and she loves Barbie. And it really made me think of, like, this is a, you know, like my mother is in her 60s and she had a Barbie, you know, like, and we all, like, my sister had a Barbie and she's in her 40s and I had a Barbie in my 30s. There's endless lineage of women who had the same toy, and then, like, and they all have a little girl, and maybe she won't care about Barbie, but I'll try and make her care about Barbie for sure, and then I get to play Barbies with her. And like, whenever I see my niece who's 11 and she's very frank, she's like, oh, I've grown out of Barbie, of course, but like you know, she's not in that stage where she can easily appreciate things that she enjoyed as a small child, because when you're 11 you're trying to get away from the things you
have to be much further away from it to be able to have nostalgia for it. It's just too close to be
totally and weird. And you don't want to be like, you don't want to think you're still a baby.
No,
you know?
Of course not. Ugh.
But we have this little ritual where I take her out for lunch when I'm home and we talk about our careers, and she wants very badly to be an actor, and she's in a show, so, you know.
Oh, amazing.
Good for her. And then we go for bubble tea, and we take the bubble tea to the toy shop in Cork, and we just walk down the doll aisle and we review all the Barbies, and she can appreciate it if it's like from a style and aesthetic point
okay,
of view.
Okay, yeah.
So it's my favourite thing that I do, and I can't wait.
I think I can't wait for you to do this as well. And I think you should just give Barbies to your son if you have a son as well.
Yeah.
Why are we saying Barbies are only for the girls?
Yeah, I don't think the Barbie movie was ready to wrestle with that yet. Maybe in Barbie 2.
I don't know. I think it was. I think Will Ferrell's character was a man who loved Barbies.
Oh, that's true. He loved Barbie.
He loved Barbies so much, and he was ultimately a very benign character who just appreciated the world and wanted to protect it.
Yeah. I just, Barbie saying to Ken at the very end, maybe it's Barbie and
it's
Ken.
And it's Ken.
My last thing on the Ken performance, which I just loved, is that I feel like so much of it was almost a parody of the kind of male roles that we nominate for Best Actor. Because, like, do you know what I mean? Like, there was this bit in...
Oh, I do.
There's this bit where she comes back from the real world and she goes, you know, the girls are screwed up, you know, we failed them. And he goes, no, you failed me. And everyone around him is like... it's exactly how we react when, like, a man does a dramatic role. And it was such a parody of, like, an Oscar's real moment.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that moment where he's, like, having the weep on the bed.
Yeah.
He's... Yeah. I think this is, for me, one of the great takeaways of this conversation is I already respected Ryan Gosling's performances, but now I just, the fact that he came back for us, the fact that he was very prepared to send up the previous, like, you know, a solid chunk of his career.
Yeah. Driver, A Place Beyond the Pines, all these, like, serious boy roles.
And he's here.
He's here, he's back.
And indeed, Margot. Because I feel like I saw a clip. I'm sure it's been doing around the rounds, and everyone will have seen it. The one where a few years ago someone refers to her as a Barbie in an interview, and she goes, "No, I'm not Barbie." I think because it was meant in a slightly not insulting way, but a little bit, just a kind of a diminishing of who she was. And she's now like, "I am Barbie, and Barbie is great," and I love that for her too.
I love her.
I love her too.
I love them all. I love my Barbies.
I even enjoyed little Helen Mirren doing the narrator voice just at random on occasion through the film and referencing Margot Robbie. And I was just like...
referencing her perfect beauty.
Just at every moment, I was like, literally, Greta Gerwig was like, and I think I'll just do this. And she did.
You can just really see her in the editing booth being like, kind of curling her lip at like, I cannot, in good faith... have Margot Robbie say to potentially very impressionable young girls that she's not pretty anymore. I just cannot. I cannot and will not abide by that.
Yeah, I'm going to need something here to go over it.
Yeah, and her just calling up Mirren again. Can you just voice note
just
me?
Just chuck me this really quickly. I've just realised there's a problem here.
I just really cannot in good conscience allow this.
I can't do that. But I feel like... just as a director, she's been so unselfconscious with this film. I don't know if that is the kind of an extraordinary act of self-consciousness that has been managed so well that it comes off as being completely kind of, I don't want to say artless, that's not what I mean, but I mean it comes across as very like naive and pure and earnest, but it feels that way. It doesn't feel like a movie where she sat around being like, I wonder what people will think of this. It feels like a movie that she wanted to make and that she just kind of enjoyed making.
And by nature constructed sets must have felt while shooting it like a world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I kept thinking when I was watching that D-Day landings thing of like, they haven't seen the rushes. They're not seeing all these actors who... I think most of them are actually dancers, the background actors, because they're able to hold themselves in these positions or whatever. There must have been so many moments when they were like, what are we doing?
This
what
could
are
either we making? Be the greatest film of all time or the worst.
Or it could be like Showgirls, but for children.
Showgirls is very good.
I agree. Showgirls is very good.
I think they hit a home run here.
Yeah.
I have no criticisms of this film and I will be seeing it again, probably tomorrow.
And then on every plane journey for the rest of my
life.
Because the thing
life,
is, if I look over and I see somebody else watching it on their TV, I'll have to put it on, because otherwise I'll just be watching their TV.
That's very true. And that will be creepy and weird.
Yeah. So bye, Barbie.
Bye, Barbie.
Thanks, Barbie.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.